This episode is brought to you by Eufy Video Lock. Eufy is a smart lock with 2K cam and doorbell that's a 3-in-1 triple security, so you can have everything in one device rather than install many pieces on your front door. It's not just for security, but it's also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys. You can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated camera. It's easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver. It's got keyless entry, so no more fumbling for the keys when your hands are full. It also has a rechargeable battery that could last around 4 months, and you'll get low battery notifications before it runs out. Passcode unlocking with a remote control with 2K clear sight to see who's at your front door and control from anywhere through the app. And with enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. No monthly fee, unlike other brands that will charge monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and never have to pay for storage. This is the future. This is everything I love about what's happening with doors. In my opinion, this is an absolute no-brainer. I'm telling you right now, this is an absolute no-brainer. We installed them in the house, and it makes, especially when you have a family, it makes life so easy, so secure, so safe, and once again, so easy. Search Eufy Video Lock. That's E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
My one-hour comedy special, The Machine, airs on Showtime November 11th at 10 p.m. That's right, everybody. I am very pleased to announce my one-hour comedy special on Showtime, The Machine, airs 11-11 at 10 p.m. So do me a favor, spread the word, tell your friends, set your DVRs, put it on your post-it at work, tattoo it on your arm, watch it in your machine shirt that you can get at BurtBurtBurt.com, and tell everyone, The Machine, 11-11 at 10 p.m. Hey guys, brand new podcast, and I'm banging them out leading up to my special November 11th at 10 p.m. on Showtime, The Machine. Once again, please spread the word, tell your friends, do whatever you can. I'm also starting to live stream these on Facebook. I'm going to live stream them in their entirety on Facebook once I figure out how to connect the audio to my Mevo. I got a Mevo that's streaming to Facebook. So if you go to my Facebook page, Bert Kreischer, you can see a build up to the one, or a teaser of the one I do with Steve-O. Steve-O was here earlier in the day. I'm going to release that one next week. And my two buddies, Jim Norton and Sam Roberts, were here this afternoon. That's a podcast you're about to listen to. There's no real prelog to this. Tour dates real quick. What are my tour dates? I had a really good time. I had really good talks today, and I appreciate all the kind words about the podcast. I see that on Twitter, and I don't really look at Facebook posts. I'm going to start looking at them more now that I'm live streaming stuff. This weekend, and I mentioned this, I'm sure, in the podcast, I'll be doing Bob and Tom on the 3rd, so tune into Bob and Tom on the 3rd. You can get, they have an app, I think, if you want to hear it live. I'm going to be throwing myself a birthday party. They don't know that yet, but I'll be throwing myself a birthday party because the 3rd is my birthday. That's right, folks. The 3rd is my birthday, so I'll be having a surprise party for myself at the Dayton Funny Bone. If you're curious how a surprise party thrown by the person whose birthday it is had at a comedy club, well, come on out, and don't forget to bring a present. I'll be there until the 5th. I'm in New York on the 6th doing Big J show, crowd work show on What's Your Fucking Deal in New York on the 6th at the Bitter End, I think. 7th, I'll be doing radio and doing a podcast. Doing a lot of podcasts that week. And yes, I'm doing your favorite podcast that week. You know it. That next weekend, the 10th, 11th, and 12th, I'm in Baltimore. I'll be doing Elliot in the Morning on the 11th. Elliot's name definitely pops up on this podcast. Nothing but great things ever come out of my mouth about my best friend. So does Cowhead's name. A lot of radio Preston and Steve come up on this podcast. It's a good podcast. And then I'm off the road. I'm home the week before Thanksgiving and Thanksgiving. I'll be at the store as much as possible those 2 weeks. Then we go to Tampa, first week of December. Morty's Comedy Joint, second week of December. Fort Lauderdale Improv, third week of December. And Levity Live in Oxnard for New Year's Eve. But my special airs November 11th. The Machine, 11-11 at 10 p.m. 11-11 at 10 p.m. 11-11 at 10 p.m. I was seeing if my buddy Tom Segura called. I was going to see if he could do a call-in and promote my special. But I'm doing Tom's podcast, by the way. I'll be on Your Mom's House. And I will be doing it with a scale in hand. That's right, guys. It's getting fucking real. Today's podcast is brought to you by Mercedes. The new S-Class is... whatever. All right. Today's podcast is brought to you by me and Showtime and my special. These two guys are newly formed radio show. Newly formed. It's been like a month. So we talk about a little bit about that. We also, if any of you don't know, I've been a big Opie and Anthony fan for a long time. I've always shared my fandom, and we talk about a lot of that stuff. This is a great podcast. These are two of the funnier people I know in the planet. Jim Norton is a guy I started, was a year above me in stand-up, and I've always looked up to. I got my first compliment in stand-up from him. I've been a fan of him on the radio for probably 15 years. And Sam Roberts was a producer, executive producer over at Opie and Anthony, and went on to do his own stuff. You've heard Sam on my podcast three times. I know that he's been on at least twice, and I've been on his podcast. And I saw them this morning when I was over at Jason Ellis. That's right. Check out Jason Ellis. I'm going to bring in new comics and introduce them to the show, starting with Kevin Hart. This is a rambling podcast. There's a birthday party waiting for me. I got to go to the front yard. We've got Salsa and Beer, which is my favorite restaurant in L.A. If you're ever in L.A., go out to Salsa and Beer. And bottles of wine and family and children and friends. That's it, guys. I'm in a great fucking mood. I feel fucking amazing. Without further ado, from SiriusXM, from the Sam Roberts and Jim Show, the Jim and Sam Show, the Sam and Jim Show. Make sure to check it out, airing every morning from 8 to 11 Eastern time. You'll hear we kind of fucked that up. Oh, here's Tommy Buns. Hold on. Hey, I'm recording an intro for my podcast. Do you want to promote anything?
Yeah, I got a tour coming up.
Oh, I don't... Never mind. We just do club dates on this podcast.
That's what I'm saying. Do them all.
Yeah, okay. What's your tour? Is this the No Teeth, No Entrance?
Yeah, yeah.
Where are you going to be?
29 cities. Just fucking look it up, man. Come on, TomSegura.com.
All right, let me wrap this up. Hang on 1 second.
All right.
Guys, without further ado, my buddies, Jim Norton and Sam Roberts.
This is podcast.
All right, we're recording. I think I'm on this one. You're on this one here.
God damn it.
You've lost so much weight, Jim.
I know, I'm a pig, thank you.
No, you really have.
I'm eating bad now.
You know who's also lost weight? Is Ellis. Jason Ellis.
Yeah, he is. We had to train for the big Shane Carwin fight.
Yeah. Carwin? Is that what it was?
Yeah. Carwin.
He fought Shane Carwin.
Who won?
When Shane Carwin won. He fought Shane Carwin with one arm tied behind Shane's back.
Yeah. I saw that.
And Shane Carwin knocked him out with one arm.
He really knocked him unconscious?
Easily. Yeah, I mean, he laid him out.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's Leanne's doing right there, is all that fucking candy.
Yeah, I'll get rid of it. I can't have it.
I might have to have a little bit. I like Almond Joys.
I had $100,000.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
I put that in my mouth and spit it out last night.
Why?
It doesn't do it for me.
No?
Honestly, best trick-or-treat candy is Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
They're the best.
There's nothing better than Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Especially when they give them out and they're those 2-packs.
Oh,
the best.
You know, I got to be honest with you, the ones that are too big.
Oh, like the big thick ones?
Yeah.
Awful. The worst.
Yeah.
They figured it out exactly right with the ratio.
Yeah.
The original.
This is an old O&A thing. It's chewing on air.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, well,
Sam, I got to the gym.
You're putting on a lot of calories, dude.
I see it, right?
I can see because your belly, it won't go away. And all that stuff is only going to add to it. You ate a lot of... Oof. That doesn't look good, dude.
It's so funny when I see pictures of you when you were fat. It doesn't even look like you at all anymore.
But the belly is still there. You know what I mean?
I did Bobby's podcast. And Bobby immediately starts talking to me about my drinking.
Oh, really? Oh, really?
Immediately. And then we go to a cigar bar. And... I've never seen someone eat so panically. He's like, "Emily, do you have a volcano cake?"
We are right now.
Yeah, we're on. Yeah.
Oh, I'm being quiet. I'm trying. I'm eating.
And then I just fucking drank a bottle of wine. It was like watched all of her disease just come out at once. And we were with some I wish I could remember the guy's name. Is gay guy, but he does not look
Sam
gay.
Roberts.
I'm not a homosexual.
Or a guy.
Have you ever thought about it?
No. No. Huh. I don't think that you make a choice. You know what I mean?
Huh.
Like, you're just like, no, this is what I'm into.
How many times have you sucked a dick?
I've never sucked any dicks.
So cute. So what do you guys got planned for tomorrow?
I'm taping at midnight.
Are you really?
And we're doing Alice as well.
You're doing Alice in the morning?
We're doing Alice before our show. And then I think Alice is doing our show after his.
God damn it, man. The serious fucking mix-up is
I love
like,
Alice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's so funny because we used to not like each other at all.
Well, yeah, we were talking about that today, about how Opie, Stern, you guys, like there used to be big beef between everybody.
Yeah.
And now...
Yeah.
Now it's all one happy family.
Now all the beef is in Jim's gut.
I could keep looking at it.
Jim gets disgusted like during interviews while we're doing the show. Mid-interview, just... We're not even being silly. Like, we're having a real conversation with, like, a celebrity.
Yeah.
And I'll just look over, and Jim will just look down at his gut and make a disgusted face at it. And I'm like, stay with me here, Jim.
I'm always with you. I hear everything that's going on.
But you also...
100 grand's good? I'll try one.
Yeah,
they're great.
I don't usually binge on candy.
It's caramel, Krispies, and chocolates.
I don't eat candy ever. I'm so hungry.
Really?
Yeah.
You just had lunch.
I know.
You're going to get very fat again.
I am worried about that.
I would be.
What are the podcasts you guys doing while you're out here?
We did Greg Fitzsimmons already.
Ooh.
And you.
Ooh.
And Corolla.
Oh, shit.
And Allison Rosen.
Nice.
And Stone Cold hasn't gotten back to us yet.
Have you done the Chive podcast?
No.
I just did that.
I have.
It's fun. I like those guys a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah. And you guys, are you guys sharing a room?
No. No. That's an HR issue.
Yeah. Go back to our individual. I'm sorry I'm chewing. I'll stop eating.
No, I like
you,
Tim.
Do you like the 100 grand?
Yep.
That's quite good, isn't it? You know, the only thing is there is a little bit of sugar in it.
I know.
I can understand, though, that like I understand if you eat a quarter pound cheeseburger,
yeah,
you put on a quarter pound. But I understand how a little piece of candy can add weight.
Yeah, it seems like it should only add the mass that it is at most, right?
How would it add extra? How does it expand inside you?
It's got to be the sugar that goes in your titties.
Doesn't work. Whatever it is, it ain't good.
It doesn't work for you, right?
Is it just slow down your body, you think?
I don't know.
How big were you when you were at your heaviest?
High 170s, maybe 180.
How tall are you?
I'm about 145 now, yeah.
How tall are you? How tall are you, though?
5'6". 5'7". 5'6 and a half.
You're 5'6"?
5'7", closer between 5'6" and a half and 5'7".
Really?
Yeah. And I don't eat that much candy. So when I do, I eat a lot of it.
Obviously.
I'm such an addictive person. I can't stop.
Yeah, that was a nice tear. That was a nice run.
That was like 8 pieces. One more.
Have one more.
One more. I will stop at one.
Is there any Reese's peanut butter cups in there? Or are they gone?
They're gone.
Maybe you have a pouch of M&M's.
Nah, I had them, but I'm already sick of them.
You had some, though?
One more 100 grand, I'll be done.
Have another 100 grand.
I get sick of
200
things.
Grand.
Have a couple 100 grand.
Yeah.
Because it's like all the caramel. It's not really that bad for you. Oh, look at him. Look at him munching away. Mm. He's had like, because these are all snack-sized candy, obviously, from Halloween.
Yeah.
And Jim has now had the equivalent of like 5 full-size chocolate bars as he sat there. He's been here for 5 minutes. He's just shoveling it down.
Will you go to the gym tonight?
You should.
I can't. I can't do night gyms. I can get on my I'll get on my treadmill with a bottle of wine and watch TV, but I can't go like work out at night. Steve Byrne used to be able to do that. We'd do the road, and he'd get done the show and come back to the gym and work out. And I'd be like, for what?
Yeah, I don't work out.
Oh, really?
Never.
Shut up.
Never.
Get out of here.
Never.
That's natural.
There you go.
The chick legs.
This bod.
Do you feel like I have an insight and talent? Because I've had you on my podcast twice before you made it big with the Sam and Jim show.
I feel like you were one of the, I call it early adopters of Sam Roberts, for sure.
I listen to the Sam podcast. Do you ever listen to that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't even listen to him when he talks to me now.
Yeah.
Bert.
And I remember like... probably like three years, maybe even more than 3 years ago, you and Bobby were doing a podcast together, and like
me and Bobby Kelly,
yeah, and you like said something about like just out of the blue,
yeah,
just spent like 2 minutes saying nice things about me. And the only reason I remember it is because literally, like, I saved that site. I put it on my desktop because it was very nice.
Well, it's so funny is that I think everyone knows this, but, like, I was a huge Opie and Anthony fan. Like, I was on doing the road, and I was driving places. And I used to love listening to the show, and I used to love when you'd come in.
Yeah.
I used to think it was, like, when they'd have you kind of, like, run, you do, like, messages or something.
Uh-huh.
And you'd run a segment. I used to love that.
Yeah, see, because a lot of people...
Did you used to do Jocktober?
Oh, yeah, that's
Jocktober
mine.
Was yours.
That's
and,
mine.
And it was, I used to giggle my
we should do
off.
That again. We were just talking about it. There's a few people we'd like to Jocktober. Maybe.
What bridges did you burn in radio that are irreparable?
None. I just did Preston and Steve in Philly for the first time. They were people that we had beef with, I guess, at one point. I've done Lex and Terry. We had beef with those guys at one point. We're fine now. Don and Mike broke up, but Mike, I think, still has a show, but
that was before Jocktober.
Yeah. Elliot won't have me on a show in DC because we fought with him. That's fine.
Yeah.
Brother Weeze probably wouldn't have me on now because Opie and I fell out, but I wouldn't say that was a burned bridge. That was just, that's where his loyalty is, understandably.
I burned that bridge on purpose.
Which one? Brother Weeze?
Yeah.
What happened with Brother Weeze? I've always liked him very much.
I didn't like him.
How come?
Leave it at that.
What happened? Okay. We got to know what happened.
No, we were doing a press tour, and I was doing it for Travel Channel. I kind of just assumed everyone, I don't know, there's like satellite press tours. I kind of assume everyone's like, you know, tell me about the show. And so I get on the thing, and I'm like, and I know Brother Weeze from the show. So I'm like, hey, man, I'm really excited to be calling in. Like before the interview starts, I'm just me and him.
Uh-huh.
I said, I'm really excited. I'm a big ONA fan. I know you and Opie are you know, good friends, are tight. So this is a real honor, man. I thank you for having me on. He's like, sure. Can't wait to have you on. And then he gets on, and he's like, so, Bert, we're going to take a caller real quick. And I was like, what? He's like, we got a caller. And I was like, okay. And then this guy's like, why are you such a cunt to Jay Moore? Or didn't say that, but why are you such an asshole?
Immediately?
Yeah, just immediately. And this is the first thing I said, and I was like, well, I'm not. And then I was like, I'm not going to defend myself on this satellite media tour.
Right.
And then I was like, I'm not. And then he goes, we're going to take another caller. And he's like, you screwed over Jay Moore. And I was like, and in my head, I'm like, I didn't.
You felt like you were ambushed.
I was definitely ambushed. And I went, oh, that sucks. You're a human piece of shit, Brother Weeze.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, I think this interview's over. And then he's like, Bert, I didn't see these calls coming. And I'm like, that's right. You may be 80 years old and brand new to this.
Right.
But I'm not fucking... And I just was like, I'll never talk to Brother Weeze again. And they've had him on the satellite press. I was going to take him off.
Oh, I'm surprised to hear that. Okay. My interactions with him have always been very good. I mean, but I came in knowing Opie, so maybe he was just nicer to me. I don't know.
He was nice to you. And I, you know...
But I've never heard you have a problem with anybody.
Radio's radio.
I've never heard you... have a bad word to say about anybody like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I don't say much. I don't have bad words to say about many people, but that really, it really kind of hurt my feelings because I was like, I don't know, when you come at it from the, I always came at everything in this business from a fan. Like,
yeah.
Like when I first got into stand-up and I'd sit at in the back of the Boston, I didn't look at you as like, when you go up, I didn't look at you as like, that's a peer right there. I was like, wow, he's doing this. I want to do this.
Right.
And then when, I remember the first compliment you ever gave me, and I came up, well, I don't know if it was a compliment per se, but it was like a Jim Norton compliment. And I got off stage. I was about to go on stage. You're like, you're not going to do that that horseshit bird joke, are you? And I was like, I am. And you're like, and I was like, oh, good. He's treating me like a regular.
I was trying to make it funny. Yeah.
Yeah, he was treating me like a friend.
I was just saying that as I walked back. Yeah. I was going, Bert.
Yeah.
Hey, Bert. Hey, Bert.
But, and so when, as I think as you get older in this business, you look at like,
did you guys hear that?
Did you hear the fucking chickens?
We all hear it, Chip.
But yeah, and so like, even when you guys got together, I told you this, Sam. I think I was like, sometimes I feel like Jim's doing the show for you.
Yeah, you were saying that.
Well, he was about to be drummed out of the business. Is that what you mean?
Like he's saving me.
Someone's laying a fucking egg right now. That's what that is. Will you shut that door for me, Sam?
Yeah. Hold on.
He's been doing chip videos.
Kid.
he's out there yelling at the chickens as Chip. Before.
They really they really stopped talking.
Well, yeah, everybody does around Chip.
Yeah.
He's the least welcoming presence. We passed by a parking lot.
Yeah.
With a big letter P in front of it. You know, like to mention parking.
Yeah.
And Chip just stood there yelling, Pekka's!
Yeah, it really is humiliating. The my face is attached to this asshole fucking character. Humiliated. All right, cool.
No, but you had said Jim was doing the... I think you told me you thought Jim was doing the show for me for that... It wasn't really a huge, long... It was probably a year when it was me, Jim and Opie.
Yeah.
It was just Opie and Jim, and I was in there, and you felt like Jim... And I think he was at points.
It was, I got to be honest with you. I listened to the episode where Jim and Opie had their fight, and it was cathartic almost to hear what I kind of assumed. I could hear...
Yeah,
I was like, I'm glad this is happening. The only thing, and I love Esther Koo, but she was trying to be nuts. She's like, yeah. Is this a bit? And I'm like, Esther! But then at one point, it got so bizarre that she was actually hilarious.
Yeah.
She was like, this is good that this is happening. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, she's painfully honest.
Yeah.
And it was definitely good that it happened. It felt good in the sense that, you know, I'm not afraid of uncomfortable moments. They don't bother me that much.
Do you like confrontation?
It's not that I like confrontation, and I have to be very angry to really, like, you know, I'm not a bully. Like, I don't like to pick on things small. Like, if I argue with somebody, I want them to be a fucking good person. Like, you know, the guys I fought with in studio were Jericho and Jesse Ventura. I mean, yeah. They were legit arguments, but they're both guys that could have fucking murdered me. I don't like picking on easy targets, like, just to be a dick. Mm-hmm. And Opie's not an easy target. I mean, he was my co-host, and he had position of power over me, so it felt okay to argue with him. And we had been building towards that for a long time, I'm sure.
It was really interesting. We had
different ideas of what funny is. You know, he likes what he likes, and I am who I am and like what I like, and we respond to different things. And maybe when you have a family and you have kids, certain your sensibilities may change. I don't know that because I'm not in that position.
Yeah.
I can only speak from my point of view. Anytime if I don't feel free to be as funny as I want to be in the way I want to be, then I resent the other person. And again, he probably feels the same way.
That's interesting. Yeah. Did you... It's this whole entire, I guess it's been, was it 2 years since Ant left?
Yeah, July 4th of 2014 is when the whole thing went down.
It's been so fucking fascinating. It had to happen at some point, because I know that, I remember going in and doing radio and doing radio with you guys. It was like a dream to me. Like, I told you this. And we talked about this. I think I ended up taking it out of the podcast. But I walked in and I was like, fuck yeah, man, finally, I get to do Opie and Anthony. And, like, we do a bit, and then I was like, yeah. And then everyone just got up and left. I was sitting in there by myself, and yeah. I was like, huh.
It was a fun show to do. Towards the end, it wasn't as fun. I mean, there was so much tension and uncomfortability on the air that couldn't be picked up by listeners in the studio. But, you know, I hated to see it end the way it ended. But we all knew it would sooner or later. You know, the fact that we went as far as we did, no one thought that volatile show would make it a decade. I know I didn't think so.
Good God. I mean, there was like...
We almost blew it in the beginning. I mean, I think you, Sam, were you there when that band came in and I fucked that girl in what became Ron and Fez's office and she was half naked, carried out on 57? We were on for maybe a month. That was like November of 2004 and we almost blew it.
Yeah, not yet.
What happened?
Oh, it was just this. We had a couple of girls come in and they were drunk and I fucked one of them. And then this is, you know, 10 in the morning. And then the other one was half naked, and there was a band with her, and she walked out half naked on the 57th Street, and the police showed up.
Oh, I heard about this.
It was a month, and Ralphie May was a guest, and we almost blew it then.
Oh, I have heard about this, because I remember when Ralphie called in. That was an uncomfortable episode, when Ralphie called in.
That was one thing I felt bad about, because I never badmouthed Ralphie. I always liked Ralphie. I still like him, and I don't know why Ant got pissed at him for some reason, or didn't, you know... But, you know, I would never tell Ant who to like or how to respond to somebody. That's not my place to do that.
Yeah.
He's, you know, but
I always feel like that. Did you feel like that? Like when Mencia would come in? I use Mencia as an example because I know you guys were so Rogan, so pro Rogan.
Yeah. But Mencia, I always liked Carlo as a person.
Yeah.
And he did talk about it, you know. But I don't pick sides like that. Like, if I like both guys, I'm much closer to Joe.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, Mencia was a guest. He was just coming in. I mean, you have on who you have on. But I liked him. As long as it wasn't a tremendous thing where some... I wouldn't want to have somebody on who damaged one of my friends. Like, Mencia didn't damage Joe. Joe hurt him. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
Joe,
yeah.
It was,
saying.
Like, weird. If somebody fucked over one of my friends, it would be a different... I would not want to have them on. You know...
It's interesting.
Yeah, I'm weird with guests, man. Like,
you've been super fucking loyal to Amy.
Yes.
I mean, that, like to, like, you, I mean, I would say if she's made one good friend in this business, you were fucking a ride or die motherfucker for her.
Yeah, but you know what's funny with Amy? Somebody just asked me about this recently in DM. I would not have defended her in that joke theft if I didn't believe her. And I really wouldn't have, because I got nothing out of it. I got a lot of my fans very mad at me. And I know how happy they would have been if I trashed her.
Yeah. It would have gone... If you had trashed her, it probably would have helped your career.
I don't know if it would have helped or hurt, but I really spoke to her, and I knew how she felt about Patrice, and I knew how Patrice felt about her. And I also know how all of us responded to Amy for a long time, and she toured with me. It wasn't like she's my new celebrity friend. I was friends with her long before she was famous. You know, I brought her on the radio, you know, and I took her on Fox and Friends one time. I was allowed to. And again, you know, she's the biggest star in the world now, and it's because of who she is. But it wasn't like I was jumping on some Amy bandwagon. I knew her. She's an older friend.
Yeah.
But Colin also defended her. And a lot of comedians came out and defended her and didn't say the people who trashed her. Hey, look, that's cool that they felt comfortable doing that. That's fine. But it wasn't like it was just me against everybody. There's a lot of comedians that stuck up for her. I just happened to do the interview because she asked me to.
Yeah. What did you think of this, the latest problem she got into with the cultural appropriation?
It's such nonsense. It's shit. It's fucking politically correct shit. And the fact that they're coming after her for that. Look, that's what happens when you get really famous. They went after Louis for his Sarah Palin tweets. I thought that was shit.
Yeah.
They just go after you. Amy's mistake, and I think that Amy talked once about, look, I'm not perfect, I've made mistakes, I'm newly famous, was that when she, you know, it's like all of a sudden you're doing well, and then the next thing you know, Hillary Clinton knows your name, and the president of the United States knows your name and quotes you, or like, and then I think that she kind of, in a way, said, like, oh, I think, and I'm going by quotes, I've heard of it, I haven't actually heard the end, but enough people have said it, where she was like, oh, that was just a character I was playing or something. I think that she was indicating that earlier jokes weren't really her. And I think a lot of people got mad at that. That's what I'm taking from it. I should probably fucking hear that.
No,
I know.
I know the jokes, and I know the time in her career, and I know what she said was accurate. Is that was a time? I was me trying to figure out my fucking voice, and there were jokes, and it's not what I do now, but that's what I did at the time.
I think what happened was, and I would have said that both of those things can exist together.
Yeah.
Because Amy, to me, again, when you know somebody, she's the same person now that I always knew. She's a lot richer, but you literally, she walks into the cellar, other people react to her differently, but she doesn't respond any differently to the comics. None. There's no difference. A funny story is that, you know, Keith had a stroke and he's been walking around with a cane. At one point, now he's not, but Amy went to hand him his cane. When he went to take it, she just let it drop on the floor. So it was such a shitty friend thing to do.
Yeah.
But it's exactly what she would have done 3 years ago. So, you know, my loyalty to her, and people say, well, you coattail riding. Not only has it not helped my career, I got cut out of Trainwreck. I'm not in the new movie. I did one sketch last year. It's not about the career.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It has nothing to do with me furthering things. It's not going to help me further things at all.
Yeah, I never looked at I talked to someone a long time ago who said, you know, you think she would have put me in something, and I was like, no, that's not why you were ever friends with someone. Like, I remember talking to Bobby one night, and I was like, I mean, not to go back to Opie and Anthony, but I was like, man, I really want to be on Opie and Anthony. Like, how would I do that? And he's like, dude, you just gotta fucking wait. And he was like, I mean, he's like, you know, if you bump into Jimmy, I go, I'd never do that. I would never put someone in that situation to be like, hey, man, I really want to do something. Can you get me on it? You know, I look at it like, if someone wants me to do something, I will totally do it. But I'm never, like, I'd never want to bump into Amy and have her feel like, oh, that's, like, she was supposed to do my podcast one time. But I would ask anyone to do my podcast. Sure. And then she just texted me when she was like, is there any chance we could just go on a hike? And I was like, hey, if you are fucking wiped out from whatever you're doing, you don't have to do anything with me. Like, do whatever you want to do. That's what the friend I want to be to you. You do whatever you want to do. And she was like, thank you. And I was like, don't mention it. But to expect something out of someone is fucking asinine.
I always, like, I don't expect things out of people. But, you know, it's like, and again, I've talked about this with comedians too. Like, over the 10 years I've been on the radio and more, I've really tried to, the only time I get mad at a comic is because I very rarely will ask for help promoting something. And if I ask for it and if they're kind of dickish about it, then I get mad. It's like I've been fucking helping comics promote for 10 years.
Yeah.
And I've always brought in new comedians and I've always wanted comics on. So it's like I'm not asking a guy to put me in your shit. That's crazy. But if I ask a guy to help promote and they're kind of dickish about that, I don't forget that.
Oh, I only ask really close friends to help me.
Like, you know, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, hey, you've done Opie and Anthony fucking 60 times. Do you think I could, you know, if my manager reaches out, could we do this? And then they don't call back. Like, you know, I have no issue with Jay Moore. He's been a friend for a long time. But the last time I was out, we were going to work something out. He goes, all right, I'll get back to you at the time. And he just never texted me back. And it was like, that's your prerogative. But I took it kind of personally. It's like, I know you a long time, dude. If you couldn't do it, just say you couldn't do it. Like, it's okay. But, or, you know, don't tell me you're going to get back to me and just not then kind of leave me hanging. Like, you know.
No, I know what you're saying. My special comes out November 11th at 10 p.m. on Showtime. I'm sure you guys all have that in your calendars. But
I do.
But I would. I've only asked like 5 people to help me out, and it's just my friends, like Rogan, Segura, Joey, Ari. Like I just leave it at the guys that I know. If they say no, my feelings won't be hurt.
But all your friends will help you promote naturally. All your friends will want to help you, because I've gotten enough texts from friends, like whether it's Amy or other people who have said, hey, could you tweet this out tonight? It's the season premiere. And it's almost like they're asking the way a friend would ask another friend. It's not shameful to ask one of your friends to do, like, I wouldn't ever hesitate to ask stupid Bob Kelly, and he would never hesitate to ask me.
Yeah.
Like, Voss texted me the other day, hey, could you tweet this CD link? Of course.
Yeah.
Or Colin, or, you know, it's like we're friends. That's, you know, it's never a burden when your friends ask you or you ask them. It never should feel that way.
Okay, but what about this? And by the way, I doubt Amy will hear this, but I'm not shitting on Amy. What I'm saying out loud, when my book came out, I texted Amy. I was like, hey, would you mind tweeting out a link for my book? She was like, no problem. Of course I got your back. I love you. And then she just retweeted my tweet. I was like, no, that's not what I was looking for.
Oh, okay.
I wanted a personal tweet from you. But then you're like, you got to be like, oh, no, thank you. I appreciate it. That's still going out to a million more people than I could have gotten it to. But sure. A million people are like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
You also go through things with people who are famous, like where, and you have to be aware of where you are in the business. Like, there's guys I know a long time who have done a few things that have annoyed me a little bit, or they're no longer accessible. Hey, man, you know, there's people who I'm no longer accessible to who I've passed on the ladder. So you also have to understand that's a part of it.
Yeah.
That, you know, sometimes it's not personal. So there's a lot of guys that are like really famous who I know, but are we friends? Not really anymore.
Yeah.
But it's not aggressive or nasty. I would hug them when I saw them because I like them, but we're not friends because friends behave a certain way.
Yeah, goes back to one of my favorite Patrice moments in my life was when I said to him, we were in Scotland, I said, I'm so glad we got to become friends. He's like, we're not friends. I was like, what? And he was like, what are you? He's like, you think if I fly into LA, are you going to come pick me up at the airport? And I was like, no. He was like, exactly. We're not friends. We work together. I was like, oh, yeah, good point.
First of all, well, then by that shit logic, Patrice had zero friends because there's nobody he would have picked up from the airport.
Yeah. I was telling you, I listened to that that memorial Opie and Anthony the day he died. Still maybe the best radio I've ever heard in my life. It was fun. Just so.
Everybody in?
Yeah. Colin, Attell, Keith, myself, and Bobby, I think. Boy, Patrice, what a shitty group to be memorialized by.
I listened to it live. I guess he died. Frosty called me and told me.
Yeah.
And I was getting dog food for Priscilla and our dog. And
I hope.
And
who's that? It's my grandmother.
And so, and I started listening to it on the air, and I was like, and I remember my wife being in the car with me and was like, what is it? And I was just like, I got misty-eyed and like started crying a little bit. And I was like, and then I said, oh, Patrice passed away. And she's like, oh my God, are you going to go to the funeral? I was like, no fucking way. She was like, why? And I go, if Patrice happens to rise from the dead at his own funeral and he sees me at his funeral, he will make fun of me for 30 fucking minutes for spending $900 to go to his funeral. But yeah, but that's the truth, is like what a friend is versus just a regular working relationship.
Yeah. He was towards the end, he was very regretful, I think, of certain things. And he did care what people thought of him. He did care about where's his place in the business. And I remember we talked about feeling irrelevant. And he was just like, man, I feel irrelevant. I don't feel relevant at all. And we just had a discussion about that. You know, when you get close to 40, you're past 40, your perspective changes. I mean, even John Lennon, they found this audio interview of him at 40, felt differently than he did at 20. He realized he was a lot more of the problem. And it was fun to watch Patrice kind of realize that, like, man, I've done these things that I probably should have done better or different. You know, so he would have been a different guy, I think, had he lived, than a lot of people remembered. I mean, in a good way, not in a bad way, in a very good way.
What was your relationship with Patrice, Sam? Because you're also black.
Well, racially.
That was one of my favorite things of Patrice, like in the last like year or so of his life, actually decided to start like acknowledging me, talking to me, asking my opinion on things. Whereas like literally, I mean, it had been years of sort of like, because that's what Patrice would do.
Yeah.
But my favorite, the last summer that he was alive, we were all at Aunt's house and he was barbecuing. And years before that, like probably 4 years or so before that, he had met Jess, my wife, at one of the Traveling Virus tours. And Jess was like, we left, and Jess was like, everybody's so nice except Patrice is such a fucking asshole. And I was like, why? He's the best. He's my favorite. And Jess was like, he didn't even acknowledge me. He didn't look at me. He didn't. You introduced me and he wouldn't look at me and blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, that's just Patrice. And, you know, he does that sometimes. Yeah. And lots of people have girlfriends. He doesn't want to get to know everybody, blah, blah, blah. And so years later, Patrice and I have a much closer relationship than we had then. And so he's barbecuing. And I was giving him the out. I walked out. I was like, oh, Patrice, I don't know, have you met Jess before? And Patrice didn't take the out. He goes, oh, yeah, we met before. And he said, see, he acknowledged something about, like, he was like, I think I was an asshole before, but you're cool. Or something like yeah, he decided, like, you know, you've been around for years enough. Yeah. I'm going to acknowledge you now.
Yeah.
And everybody felt better. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we went out. He did a Showtime taping, and I was on a TV show, and I had fucking tons of money what I thought was tons of money. And so I filled up my Navigator or whatever truck I had at the time with everyone I knew. I mean, I packed it out, and I was like, we're going to go see my favorite fucking comic to watch live. And we all drove out, and Patrice was staying at like a Hilton Garden Inn it was NBC Suites. And we were at the taping, and I came up to him afterwards, and I said, hey, buddy. And he was like, what did you come out here for? I said, we came out to watch you. Of course, I told Gary Goldman we came out to watch him too. But we ended up, and he was like, what? And I said, yeah, I brought all these people. And he was like so moved. And then we all went back to the Embassy Suites where they were doing like a rap party. And we sat and drank. And I remember Patrice was just sitting there like kind of a shocked.
Yeah.
But I mean, did you think he was that good when we were just doing stand-up in New York?
You know, you knew he was that funny, but again, as a guy, he was such a funny guy.
Yeah.
Like, hanging out with him, I mean, he really laughed. So, yeah.
You had an opportunity. I always say, the guys who were, it's that, whatever that Malcolm Gladwell book, the guys who went out to Silicon Valley and went to high school where the computers just happened to be and learned how to do computers. I did not get I grew up in this business in the New York scene. But I didn't get what you guys got was that the cellar table. And that's now, I guess it's gone.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, Patrice is dead. Geraldo's dead. Manny Dwarman. Manny Dwarman was a very big part of that. The owner of the Comedy Cellar. Noam, his son, is great, too. He loves comedy. He loves comedians. But Manny was a funny mother. Did you ever meet Manny?
Yeah, Manny.
You knew him. Okay.
I passed at the cellar. I did one spot. I was sitting with Maron. Maron gave me, said to Manny, he's good. I went to the spot. I was taping Nevermind the Buzzcocks, which was Marion's show the next day.
I did that once. Yeah, I did it with Coolio and the lady who from Berlin. Take my breath away.
I had my funniest line on that show. We were looking at Loverboy. You remember they'd line up three men. One of them was a celebrity. One of them was like the lead singer of Loverboy. His name was Mike, I think. Mike something. Mike.
Brad Gillis was the guitarist.
Was he really?
Yeah.
His name was like Mike Young, whatever.
Okay.
So they line the three guys up and they kind of like stare off in the distance and you tried to grill them to find out who the celebrity was, which one was the lead singer, Loverboy. And my team was all panicked and I go, guys, I can figure this really easy. And I just went, hey, Mike. And one guy turned his head.
And that's funny.
Yeah. But Manny passed me. He's like, call in your avails to SD. You can start working here. And I was so fucking heartbroken. And I said to him, I go, Manny, if this had been a year ago, I would live in New York for the rest of my life. But I live in LA now. I go, I'll never be able to call my veils in. I go, this, like, in my head, I was like, do I fucking move from LA back to New York? Because I got passed at the Cellar. But I was like, I had a job at a TV show. So, but that's all my only remembrance of Manny is that one night.
Yeah, he was such a funny motherfucker. But he was a big part of that table, too.
Really?
Yeah, and him and Patrice had a falling out towards the end. Me and Manny had one argument. I left the Cellar for 40 days. And I finally came back because I'm like, I missed him and I missed SD and I missed all of them. I'm glad I did, too. At the time, he might have had a brain tumor, so he might have been a little short-tempered. That happens with a brain tumor. So towards the end, he was a little jumpier, but he was still funny.
Are you still doing nightly spots at the Cellar?
Not nightly, but I do them a lot when I'm in town. I'll take off like usually a Sunday or something.
Hold on. This is going to blow my mind. You're telling me there are nights you don't do stand-up?
Occasionally Sundays I take off. Yeah, I have to because I'm doing radio early in the morning.
When did you start taking off?
Oh, years ago. Years ago
serious?
Because, yeah, it was too much. And it was like, I go on dates now. I try to live more because it was like, you just start feeding on yourself and I have nothing to talk about.
You're the reason I feel guilty about not going to the store. Because I remember one time you were saying like, you gave up like anniversaries to
the
spots.
Everything gave up. But after a while, it's like I'm an established act. And I noticed that like sometimes if I don't go on for a night or two, it's after all these years, it's refreshing to have a night or two of breathing. And you're confident enough to know I cannot do stand-up for a week or 2 weeks. I mean, I don't take that kind of time, but I mean, I'm still a funny comic. I can go 2 weeks without headlining a show, and I can still go on and headline a show. You know what I mean? Like, and then sometimes it feels – one of the problems is that you start to get where you're fucking – You just start, it feels automatic and it doesn't feel alive anymore.
Yeah.
So then you go up and fucking take a break and you have to fish for it for a half a second and it feels alive again. So there's a tactical reason for it too. It feels better.
You get stuck in a roteness of it, especially when you do the road. There's, from my opinion, and I say I do more road stuff than city stuff just because that's my schedule. Is you get into a place where it's like, oh, this joke goes after this joke.
Right.
This joke goes after this joke. And then you're like, well, fuck, where's the fun, the dancing in it?
Right, there's
a
no
little
dancing,
bit.
Yeah.
Do you ever think you should have started stand-up, Sam?
I used to when I was younger. I don't anymore. But when I was younger and didn't know exactly what was going to happen with radio and all that stuff, like because I was looking around, especially once the podcast explosion happened, and I was like, fuck, like all the podcasters are comics. And I was like, if I was a comic and I put in some years doing that, then I would probably have an audience from that. And then I could do a podcast and blah, blah, blah. But that was also during a period where like, I was just trying to figure out what was going to work. And I didn't have the confidence in just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
So I was still thinking like, what am I not doing that I should? And at that point I was like, ah, I probably should have started comedy. Maybe I should have done comedy, but not anymore now. I mean, I think I'm pretty well suited where I am, and maybe because I'm 33, it'd be weird to start comedy now, and I don't have that desire necessarily.
Did you ever think what a crapshoot your occupation is?
Like, yeah.
How I mean, there's what is it? What are the odds? Like one in how many guys came through as producers on O&A and went on to do radio?
All of them. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I mean, one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I, none.
Who's there been? There
was Rick Delgado. Rick was the old one at the...
I was, by the way, not to interrupt, but Steve C.
Yes.
That picture you tweeted about the bear?
Oh, yeah.
That was at the Borgata.
The video. Did no. Connecticut, I think. Not Borgata. Borgata did not have it.
Sun?
Maybe.
Because I saw that bear as I saw that tweet. Isn't that fucking crazy?
Oh, wow.
Was he Foundry Music?
Yeah. Yes. Are we, am I on camera or no?
No, I was going to put it on so that we could all be on camera.
Bob Kelly has one of those.
I know. He's the reason I got this.
It's good?
We'll see in a second.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty fucking amazing, the arm you got there. Oh, Bert, you're so good at that. Yeah, there was Rick Delgado at NEW. And then Ben Sparks was the early days of
XM.
XM. And then after Ben was fired, it was
Steve.
Steve C. After Steve C.
Travis.
Was it Travis? That's right. And then it was you. Did you ever officially produce or no?
Yeah, I was the executive producer.
You were?
You were?
Yeah, under Tim Sabian.
We also had Stunt Brain.
He was the K-Rock executive
producer. K-Rock exec producer.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean...
And a good guy.
Yeah. But I think it also, you know, that's why I just was doing shows and I was doing that podcast by myself for a long time.
About cats?
Yeah, whatever cats, whatever. Just because I wanted to do it and I wanted to learn the exercise of it. And get the practice in and do all that. I was doing a podcast for a while. It was not very good.
Talking by yourself on a podcast or on a radio show by yourself is one of the most difficult fucking things in the world.
Yeah, that's why I was like, let me just do an hour a week and just put it out. And I'd get like, whatever, 2,000 downloads or something. It wouldn't be anything, but it'd be like, it'd be the exercise of it. And then doing the wrestling podcast and then everything else. But that's why I started calling myself the last professional broadcaster.
Yeah.
Because then it meant something. Then I was like, no, you used to be able to just be a broadcaster without having to be a comedian or a musician or an actor who's also got a podcast. Like, you could just host shows and be a broadcaster.
Did you ever think about starting a podcast?
I'm not allowed to contractually. Of course, I wanted to this time. But Sam and I are going to be able to have one for the show. And I also do UFC Unfiltered with Matt.
Oh, that's right. What am I talking about? Yeah, I'm supposed to that.
So I do have that outlet. And it's almost like I don't think there's a big call for a Jim Norton podcast.
As long as we're doing the show?
Yeah, we're doing the show. Jim and Sam Show podcast. Matt Sarah, I'm on Ozzy's Boneyard. Like, there's a lot of me. And I'm always around. So I think that, you know, you don't want to be overkill. People can get what they need. Unless the podcast would have had such a unique angle that something that Sam wouldn't want to talk about. Or, you know, I couldn't think of anything that was so chronically unique to what I wanted to do that I need my own fucking podcast.
But when we were talking about doing the show together, one of the things that
How did this come up?
Pillow talk.
Yeah. Yeah, after I took the pillow out of my mouth, I started talking about it.
It's true.
Oh, look at you guys. Like an old comedy duo.
That's right.
I was approached first by the company.
Yeah.
Who had already talked to Jim. Because I really didn't know. I knew Jim and Opie were going to separate, but I think Jim thought this too. He was just going to leave, you know.
Really?
I was tempted.
In the very, very beginning, right? Like when you first started going on the air and saying, well, I'll just not be here in October, your intention was quite possibly to just leave the platform.
Or do my own thing.
Right.
I just knew that we weren't going to work together anymore. And I said to my agent, I'm like, look, this company doesn't give a fuck about me. They care about Opie.
Do you really think they don't give a fuck about you?
I did, yeah, absolutely.
At the time, you thought.
I'm like, I'm going to leave. And he goes, Jim, that's just not true. They care about Opie, but they also care about you. And then he told me about this research they had done that showed I was equally popular. They wouldn't give me numbers or whatever, but they actually really wanted me to stay, which I was very surprised at. So I started meeting with Andrew Moss and Scott, and they sat me down. And again, they didn't say I could do whatever I wanted. They didn't. They said, in an ideal situation, if you're not working with Opie, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I mean, I mentioned Sam. I said I would want Travis involved somehow. I didn't think you'd want to leave it. I thought Sam was going to do his own show and not want to do it. I thought he may even team up with Opie. I just didn't know. And that was how the ball got rolling on it. And I said, I didn't think they were going to give us a morning show. I said, no. I don't want to be on Opie's channel anymore. I was mad at him. It wasn't like I'm going to show him. It was simply, he's going to do his thing, and the company will take care of him. I don't think they're going to take care of me, so let me just do my own thing on another channel. I'm like, I don't care if we're up against each other. I don't give a fuck. It doesn't matter to me. I just want to do my own thing. And they're like, well, we want you guys together on the same show. Whatever. You know, they had that strategy, and, you know.
But we didn't have any...
thought of doing the morning show. It wasn't even, I mean, we always said we would, but it wasn't at all pitched to us. Because, yes, I went to, after they talked to Jim and he mentioned my name, I guess they came to me. And I was having a pretty good run just doing my, Jim passed gas. That's one of the. One of the wonderful things that accompany us every morning now. Just such a great inclusion.
It won't stink.
I was having a pretty... Yeah, well, I was having a pretty good run doing the night show, you know? And I was having fun doing it, and it was growing, and it was had a fan base, and it was good. But, you know, there's not that many people I would do a show with full-time. But, like, Jim would be one of them, you know? And so when that came to me, I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And so I talked to Jim about it, and I was like, you know, I was like, let's think about it. I said, if you want to do a show where we're partners, I would do that. He's like, but if you want to do a show where it's just you by yourself, I was like, I understand, because that's what I did.
Did you think about doing one by yourself?
Sure, but the bottom line, Sam didn't want to be just forgotten in the Jim Norton show, and I didn't want to be incorporated into the Sam Roberts. Like, right. It had to be something different.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Which was fair. I mean, Sam's established himself as a good radio guy.
But we both liked that, like, we had outside interests. So, like,
yeah.
That's one of the things we talked about, like, that I have my wrestling podcast and my other stuff over here, and Jim's got stand-up and the UFC podcast over here, and it's like... We come together, we do this show, and then we have this life, and we have outside lives, and the whole thing, we just bring everything and combine it all, as opposed to one thing absorbing the other.
Yeah.
And I think we were just both on the exact same page with that.
And the shows we did were fun.
Yeah.
Like, we were doing shows together, and it didn't feel strange, because we know each other for 10 years. I mean, it didn't feel strained or uncomfortable. It was easy. Because I always thought Sam was funny, and he was always funny on the air when we were on. And especially when Opie and I stopped clicking, per se. Well, it wasn't an aggressive, like, fuck you. It was not like that. But I was like, I would always like when Sam was in. And I thought it was a tremendous tactical error for Ope to have him go do the night show, because I thought he should be on this show. Like, you know, I mean, I got why they did it, but I thought Sam was funny on the show. I'm like, our show is going to be hurting without him on it. I thought it was a mistake to not have Sam on that show.
It was interesting because I said this a bunch of times, and I don't know if it's ever been received positively, but I in being a fan of Opie and Anthony, I didn't realize how integral Opie was. When all of you guys were on the show and you guys were just clicking, I don't think I realized Opie's strength in that driving it and weaving it. And then when it was the three of you guys and I came in, I went, oh, this is amazing. Like, this is like, it's, but. And I having done Opie, I think Opie by himself has a much different energy. Like, really fun. Like, I did Opie the other day, and I had a lot of fucking fun. And like I said to you, I said it to Sam, but I was like, it's good seeing you two together, because I felt like I can understand that. I don't understand that Opie didn't like the chip, because I was the guy who's got a kick out of chip.
Yeah.
I always got a kick out of chip, the fact that you would do it. To girl, like, it started as a prank to girlfriends that you do it public. Yeah. I thought that was the greatest thing in the world, because I was like, oh, that's an inside joke that has no payoff to anybody.
Right.
And, but I thought it was cool that you guys, that it happened this way. I hope there's no hurt feelings. I hope that everyone, I don't like confrontation, so I don't like, you know.
I've heard a few moments of his new show. And he sounded much more comfortable. Like, you know, with Opie, and again, we've said this in our arguments, but there was two Opies, or I felt there was two.
Yeah.
The one guy who was insecure and uncomfortable, who was very hard to be around. And the comfortable Opie, who I love. Yeah. Like, that guy, like, when he was feeling comfortable, I love being around him. He's my friend. He's fun. We flow. There's, like, a nice click. But I think he indicated this, that after a while he was uncomfortable with me and Anthony and the chemistry we had, and he felt kind of left out. And it was like, it's got to be frustrating if you want your participation or your role to be different than what it is in a live moment. It's got to be annoying. So then all these weird hurt feelings developed and this resentment, and then it happens on both sides. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
But like, I'm sure that in the afternoon, he's much more free-flowing and enjoyable than he was with me. Just like, I think
it's a totally different dude.
I am different than I was with him. We're better off separated, because it's like this. Because me and Opie, the problem with that was it was Opie and Anthony and I was there. And then all of a sudden, the example I've used is, then it was just me and him and this brilliant, monstrous fucking comedic force is removed. The show will never be as funny as it was with Anthony. Mm-hmm. So then we're, and it's no reflection on both of us. I mean, we just, you can't replace fucking Anthony. So then all of a sudden we're like a car on the LA freeway at the end of the fucking car chase with the sparks flying and it's ground down the access. It's coming to an ugly, uneventful halt. There's no shootout. There's no bang. It's just...
Yeah.
And that's what it was like. So I'm happy that he's happy you're doing what he's doing now. I'm sure he's much freer, and I feel like I am too.
Have you guys listened to him and Ant talk online?
I heard it. I had mixed feelings about it, only because I wished it would have happened earlier. You know, I'm happy that they spoke because it was good. Just as a guy who, again, I have a loyalty to those guys, and that, you know, I have to. I always will. And Ant and I have remained very, very close. But I kind of wish that he had been reached out to before it was when it was. Mm-hmm. You know, like I wish it had happened 4 months ago. I would have felt a lot happier about it. Even if I wasn't included in it, I still would have felt happy about it.
All right. Well, that makes sense.
But I'm happy that they're talking and they very well may wind up reuniting. I mean, I just don't know. If they decide to sit down and talk, then they will.
That would be interesting.
Sure.
I don't know. Did you now? Have you guys decided to pick wars with anybody?
No, like radio guys wars.
Going after it. Yeah, yeah. Whatever. Like that was the old. That was like. Like I still like. I'm really good friends with Cowhead.
Yeah,
I love Cowhead.
Him and
man.
Bubba Love Sponge.
But him and him
still
is,
go at it,
and they're just destroying lives everywhere they go.
They're right there too. They're both in Tampa.
They're
so
both in Tampa. It's like I got a tweet. I got mentioned in a tweet somehow, and it was like, if my ratings are below your ratings, I will quit radio forever. It was like Bubba against Cowhead, and I'm like, wait, is Bubba on the air? Like,
but it's like on Sirius, there's no ratings, and like people end up fighting with each other on the same platform, and it's just like this battle of egos. Like, there's no actual thing that you're feuding
over. How do you know
if
you're doing well? Do they tell you you're doing well?
Yeah, if they're nice. They're happy with us. Because they told us they're happy with us.
And that's all you, then you go, we're good.
You know, it's funny. We think about, I'm much more concerned with how the fans feel about the show.
Yeah.
Some of the hardcore fans got a little unreasonable when the show broke up. Was they started to hate all of us. I think because this thing they loved so much was gone.
So I felt like the pests went to Anthony.
Some did, some didn't. Ant's politics lost a lot of people.
Yeah,
sure, and it's just because no matter what side of politically you're on, you're losing half the people if you're dug in. Yeah, you know what I mean,
there's a large, maybe not that large, but there's a extreme fan base. Most of the pests are just kind of gone, I think.
Well, did they grow up?
Don't forget they grew up. Yeah,
yeah, they got older, and then I think there's also a fan base of people that don't listen to any of the shows anymore and just kind of fuck around on the internet, and then they all kind of splintered off into various different groups.
Like Reddit got very I didn't go there for almost a year because the Amy I was very happy to have her on the show and talk, and they had killed her for a long time, and so
they
people
want her dead.
Yeah, she's become, and look I understand the part of it, how it got started. There's one I wish I would have done one thing differently.
What's up?
When I first started, I heard they were trashing her and calling her a thief with Patrice's jokes. I knew where those jokes came from. They were party jokes, those fucking things. I knew those were not Patrice.
I'm going to step in for 2 seconds.
Sure.
I don't know if you remember this, but my most famous bit when I was 8 months into comedy was a donkey punch joke.
Yeah. Right.
It was a street joke.
It's a street joke.
It had no value to my act, and the fact that I was doing it in a comedy club where real comics worked, I was embarrassed.
So yeah, the fact that I, so when they started saying that Amy stole this from Patrice, I knew that she didn't steal this from Patrice. But I went on Facebook and just made a post defending her. But I wish I was a little cunty about it. And I was like, yeah, the people saying this don't know what they're talking about with comedy or whatever. And they were real comedy fans.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? I shouldn't have been cunty. Like, I should have respected the fact that these are guys who love Patrice. And they thought, even if I didn't agree with what they thought, they weren't coming from a place of being you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I kind of wish I had handled that differently because they were defending a guy who I love very much. So I wish I had handled that a little bit better. But, you know, when I went on Reddit and I posted, hey, you guys could have called in. But a lot of them took it like, well, we were working. You're taking it like you're taunting us. But I'm like, no, it literally wasn't. I was letting you know that, like, it was okay to call. Like, she would have talked to you.
Yeah.
They took it like I was motherfucking them and going, hey, Dick, she didn't call. But that really wasn't what I was saying. So it was like the fact that this stuff just doesn't translate. Like, I'm like, if I could post this and have it misinterpreted this much, there's nothing I can say to make people even want to communicate. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, but some of those guys are really funny, man. It's one of those things where they can be very harsh and they can be unreasonable. But some of the funniest shit comes out of there from those fans.
Do you remember when you did that?
Some of the most vicious, funny shit is from those guys.
But that's the key word, is vicious.
Yeah.
Do you remember when you debated Lindy West?
I do.
Obviously. Yes, well, that's a fucking stupid question. But do you remember Lindy West then going on and doing a video, reading the replies that ultimately, and I have to say ultimately, the pests. I think that's who... All center.
Or the subreddit guys, and I think they're different than the pests. A lot of those are not pests.
There was one pest one, and I'll say it's a pest one because it made me laugh out loud. I have nothing against Lindy West, and I hope nothing but
what you're
positive.
Yeah.
But there was one where she was like trying to show how mean they were, and she's like, "I hope a refrigerator falls on you," and I started howling, laughing, going, "That guy listens to ONA."
They just say mean shit sometimes. Yeah.
You buffet molester, like, and you're going, that's a boss joke.
Yeah, some of them are just mean, but again, they approach humor the way I've approached it so many times. They're not. It's different when you know the people involved. Like, I'm more protective of Amy because she is my friend, or a guy, or someone like Leslie Jones, who I know as a person. But you know what? If I didn't know them, I probably would be hitting as harshly. You know what I mean? Because I've hit, you know, I like with here's something that, you know, as a comic, I can't always think I'm right either. Like with the Ghostbusters thing, I'm like, why the fuck is everybody so mad about this? And blah, blah, blah. And then they're like, hey, Dick, you remember when fucking Steve Martin, how mad you got when he took that? And I'm like, you know what?
That? I remember that.
I was vicious.
Horrific.
When he did the Pink Panther, I took it very personally. So I was like, yeah, you know what? That's correct.
Yeah.
You're right. Like, you don't always think of that when you're saying shit.
Oh, I called out Anthony Bourdain on Twitter the other day.
Did you? Why?
Because I was drunk, ultimately.
That's the root cause, right?
The root cause, honestly, the root cause is that I've never made a product as good as his for the type of medium that we've worked in. I never have even come close. I've never been allowed to the freedom of the reins that he got. And I always looked at him as like this like fucking alt fucking commerce idol. Fuck the money. It's about the work. And it was a fucking selfie of him on a fucking private jet. And I just was like, I just tweeted like, this is the reason you should get rid of your social media or something. This is disgusting. Anthony Bourdain shouldn't be fine. I don't know, whatever I tried. You're not a Kardashian. You're not fucking DJ Khaled or whatever I said. And immediately I got lit the fuck up. And they were like, whoa, whoa, asshole. All you do is brag on everything you fucking do. and then I got some real, like, the legit ones, like DMs of guys I follow. And they're like, hey, man, I don't want to call you out, but fucking you do a lot of what you're complaining about. And then I Googled. I'm on a plane, by the way. And I Googled myself on a private jet, and there's like two pictures, and I'm like, what a cunt I am. And so I immediately, like, I get it. I'm drunk. I'm going. I'm fucking off. I'm done tweeting about this.
And no one minds that. Like, you know, I've gotten cunty tweets. Sam's gotten cunty, and then a lot of the times the guys will email me, hey, could you unblock me, dude? I was being a cunt. And I'm like, yeah, no problem. Like, because Bourdain is such a good guy. He's a fucking ex-heroin user. He should be dead. And now the fact is, he's a pretty real guy. He loves his MMA and his, you know, the animation and stuff. He's like a pretty real guy. So, like, yeah,
he's a good guy.
If he's enjoying the fruits of his labor, as they say, fuck it. Enjoy it. But it's funny that you did that and got called out.
I got called out, and then I realized
we're all cunts sometimes.
I realized that two of the pictures I had just posted were me in first class. Yeah.
We're all dicks like that sometimes.
I'm a hypocrite, if nothing else.
But it's not even intentional. A hypocrite is somebody that digs in and fucking denies or disavows who they were. If we all make asshole statements that are inconsistent or hypocritical, it depends on how you handle them. There's been times where I've stuck to them too harshly or too rigorously because I didn't want to lose the argument. And then there have been times like stuff with that Peter Sellers, Steve Martin thing where I was kind of a dick, where I was like, yeah, you're right. I mean, that's how you guys are reacting to the Ghostbusters. I was kind of cunty about the Pink Panther.
You cunty is a fun character.
It can be, yeah. Thank you.
Man, those were those days when the truckers would call and you'd fucking light them up. And you'd be like, I remember just being in a car driving up La Brea. Just, you know, it's this, the small details of a story always fucking I get hung up on. I can tell you where I was at certain moments. Like, do you remember the Louis C.K. Patrice etymology of the word, the N-word?
Yeah.
I wasn't going to help you with the word. I wanted to just see if you'd say it. It was about the birth of the word nigger. That was where it was, right? That was
yes.
It was.
Yes.
And I was driving. I was getting ready to go to tennis. I used to listen to O&A. It was it was after the walkover for half of the time. But it was at the end of the show when they do best of, clip of the day or whatever. And I'd drive to tennis every day, and I'd listen to the last hour of Opie and Anthony, the last 30 minutes of Opie and Anthony. And I was driving. I was about to pull onto West 6, and Louis was like, you know, whatever. And as he said it, I've never done. I pulled the car over, and I was laughing. I pulled like, you know, you hear people go, sure. I had to pull over. I was laughing. I legit pulled over and was fucking howling laughing. do you find yourself emulating any of the past show that you guys did as someone working with Jim, as a fan of the show, and as someone that, like, do you find yourself going into, like,
Not unless we're doing something specific, like we did, we had Ken Bone call in. So we did the Ramon calls again, but that was almost like we wanted
Ramon?
To do.
Ramon,
yeah.
What was the whole point of Ramon?
It was Steve Carlisi, who was our old producer, would do these promos, and it was like this weird man. Ramon was his houseboy. And the guy would do all this stuff, and then he would say, "Ramon." Clean that up. And Ramon would always have, it was always gross and dirty, and we'd always make fun of Steve because his fucking production was so misogynistic and mean and rapey. We would tease him about that.
Yeah.
So whenever I would do Steve from Yellowstone, Ramon, I would say racist shit, I would say horrible shit, because that was like I was mocking this thing that his production, I was making fun of in caricature.
You got it. No, go ahead.
No, keep working on it.
What was the word?
Caricaturing of his production. And it just became popular.
Steve from Yellowstone.
From Yellowstone, because we always called him a bear.
Yeah.
So that was Yellowstone National Park, and that was why he would always start off with, well, I really wanted to. That was a Steve C impression. So I was mocking the viciousness of his production.
Yeah.
And then the fucking fans went crazy, and it caught on. And we hadn't done it for how long? Probably 5, 6, 7 years?
At least, maybe even more.
It started hurting my throat. Part of it was like, Rimmer! Like doing that.
Yeah.
And I almost started, we talked about it before, I said I want to Ramon him.
Yeah. So like if there's something like that where it's like an old bit that's almost like a tip of the hat.
Yeah.
Then that's one thing. But in terms of actually like emulating shows and show styles, like I was in it, so I wasn't like listening to it the same way you'd listen to it in the car for so long. And I also felt like even when I was on the show, I was kind of a different voice than everybody else in the room, and that's probably why so many people either liked me or far more hated me, because it was different from whatever was going on. And then the last year and a half doing the show separate from them, I kind of was like a cleansing of everything, where I was just figuring out just me doing a show completely independent of that. I don't want to say completely independent of that world, but completely independent of that show. And so that's where I found my voice. And that's the voice now. So I don't think I find myself emulating.
Are you still living in god-awful West Nyack?
Westchester. I don't live in West Nyack. I mean, that's still, anytime you're at Levity Live, I'll be up there. it's real close.
How far of a drive is that? That's what, got to be an hour in the city every day.
No, it's because I live like a half-hour train ride.
Okay.
In the city, so it's fine. I live in Scarsdale. But it's like, it's like a 20-25 minute ride up to West Nyack for Levity Live. I remember when we did I think that was the first time I interviewed you, was on the podcast I was doing in your hotel room in West Nyack.
Oh, yeah, I think you did my podcast, but you interviewed me.
Yeah.
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 And Roland just got drunk.
No, that was in New York.
Oh, wait. You interviewed me on your podcast.
In Nyack.
And then you interviewed me again on my podcast.
And that was in the city.
And Roland just got drunk.
And Roland brought two, like, handles or whatever. And, and he got drunk and passed out on your bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The only other person to do that is, you know, Miss Pat?
I do.
Miss Pat came and do my podcast in Indianapolis, and she has like a 35-year-old son, and he came in too.
How old is she?
Probably 47, I'm going to guess. 48.
A 35-year-old son?
Yeah.
She was 12 when she had him?
She was 13, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. I think. And so he's like a grown man, and he came in my room, in my hotel room, and then just got in my bed under my covers and went to sleep.
Under the covers?
Under the covers. I was just like looking at it, and he's like snoring in the middle of the podcast. I'm going to see her in 2 days.
I like Miss Pat.
Yeah, she's a real interesting.
It's so funny watching you do stand-up, though, because like that night, I think like I must have seen you do Wes Nyack twice. Unless it all happened at the same time. Because one time I went, and you brought Roland and me both. I went with Roland. And you brought us both up on stage. And you're like, now let's all take our shirts off. And I was like, I'm not going to do that. But Roland's so like young and impressionable that he was like, okay. And he took his shirt off.
In a heartbeat. And then we shaved his
and
back.
And then you brought him backstage and shaved him. But I think either the time before that or the time after, like, you looked at like me and you were like, oh, you want to go to the Yard House or whatever, which is in the mall right there after the show. And I was like, yeah. And then you're like, cool. And then you went up on stage and you're like, we're going to the Yard House after the show. Everybody go on.
Yeah, that's my problem. I want to be more like Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart does like he'll do buyouts like a club if they want him to go to the club afterwards. He's like, yeah, 10 grand. He's been doing
You do an after party that you actually make money for.
Black comics have been doing it for fucking years.
Yeah. What you should do.
Yeah. I'm sure Kevin gets a lot more than 10 grand right now to go to a place.
Oh, when was the last time you talked to Kevin?
We DM'd because he was supposed to do like my show with Opie, and he just did Howard and left the building. So I DM'd him on Twitter. I'm like, how come you didn't do our show? I mean, like, and then he wrote me back. He's like, why don't you? He's like, you should have just texted me. I had his old number. I did text him. He didn't get back to me.
What's his new one?
He gave me. He's like, I texted him. I'm like, you didn't text me back. He's like, you got my wrong number, stupid. And he sent me. So I don't know. I haven't talked to him in a while. Other than that,
who's the most famous person that you started stand up with?
Started, I would have to say Louis was ahead of me. But
who was in your class?
Jim Florentine, Bob Levy. Well, Bob Levy was ahead of us too.
You, Florentine, Pete Corielli.
Yeah, I was ahead of Pete. I'm like 8 years ahead of Pete. 7 years.
Really? Wait, how long have you been doing stand-up?
26. Since 1990.
Oh, wow.
Since I'm 21.
I've been doing stand-up. It's going to be 18 years tomorrow. In 2 days.
Wow. How old are you?
I started when I was 26. I started. I'm 44 in 3 days. On the third. I'll be posting this tonight. So, yeah, so I don't need to make up times. I'm doing a surprise party for myself at the Dayton Funny Bone.
Are you really?
Yeah, I'm going to have them shut off the lights and call me on stage. And then when I come up on stage, turn on the lights, it goes,
it's going to be fun. I don't know. Louis was ahead of me. Marin was ahead of me. Colin was ahead of me. I don't know who's in my class. I mean, Florentine, a few other guys. I don't see most of them anymore.
Jim Gaffigan?
Yes, Gaffigan's around my time. If you name guys like J.R. Havlin. He was a head writer for The Daily Show for many, many years.
Oh, I know who J.R. Havlin is, yeah.
Jay Moore, guys like Jay. Chappelle, a little, maybe around the same time we started.
Did you think Chappelle was, like, was it so undeniable when you first saw Chappelle?
He was already well known. I'm saying I was already 5 years into it, 6 years into it before I met Chappelle. So yeah. I've been hearing his name for years.
Really?
Jim Brewer, yeah, a few other guys.
You having an asthma attack?
No.
Oh.
Just stuffy.
Jim Brewer? Did you think Brewer's going to take your old seat?
I heard they were trying to sign him. I knew Opie wanted him. But I heard in advance that he had said no.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't care who took it, to be honest.
Really?
No.
So if I show up, you'd be...
God bless you.
And I can still do your show, right?
You sure can.
But you show up early, do your show, then do your show, and then turn it into an hour of Bert. Or 4 out of 5 hours of Bert.
Yeah, I didn't care.
One of my favorite things I did on SiriusXM was a takeover playlist for the classic vinyl. Oh, it's the coolest thing.
You loved it?
Yeah, you used to do it for Ozzy, didn't you?
I still do a nightly show on Ozzy's Boneyard.
Cool. So
oh, I didn't know where else to go. No, sorry.
But do you play music on
Oh,
it?
Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. I do a 1 hour show.
Oh, yeah.
Where you send a playlist to my email, and I will play your 13 songs on Ozzy's Boneyard.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, every night.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fucking great. I got to pick my own playlist, and I had a fucking blast.
You did?
And I did, I was like, I want to hit the post.
And Danny Falcone?
Yeah, and the guy was like, nah, you won't be able to. Why don't you just cut them, and I'll plug them in so they hit the post. Yeah. And I was like, oh, good call. Yeah.
But by the way, that's how every DJ does it.
Really?
Yeah, serious? Yeah.
Oh.
It's all bullshit.
Who's, who do you think, like, who do you think's running serious besides Howard? Is Sway, like, a big name over there?
Yeah, I mean, Sway's a big name. I don't, here's the thing that's weird about Sirius. And Sway gets a lot of listeners.
Are we going out live right now?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Mike Halter just tweeted a photo.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, hey, I'd say call my phone, Cowhead. I can go offline.
Sway is, Sway's awesome. And I mean, when you have a guy who's doing a daily morning show that also interviews the president and the candidates and all these people, I'd say that's a pretty, good look. But in terms of just like radio audience, I don't think that anybody's coming close to Howard.
Really? How many listeners do you think he has?
I don't know.
I have no way of judging
it. Did he, just a sidebar, did he fire like Richard Christie and all those guys?
No, they're still all there.
Okay.
No, I think so.
Because I saw Richard Christie online and it didn't say, his profile didn't say anything about Howard.
I don't know. Maybe that's another thing. But yeah. I saw Richard and Sal both. I've seen them very recently.
I love Sal. I see him. I like Richard, too. I see those guys a lot.
I like Richard.
Richard is like, the last time I saw him, it was literally like last week or something. We were in the elevator bank, and it was Richard Christie and John Hine were talking to each other, and I was just taking the elevator up, and I was like, oh, hey, guys, how's it going? Hey. And they went back to their conversation, and I just kind of waited for the elevator, and there was a pause, and Richard just looks at me, and he goes, we're talking about football. I was like, cool, Rich. I appreciate that you wanted to be inclusive in that.
Was it you that I was with? But I was in SiriusXM and they said, hey, do you want to go back and see Howard's studio? And I was like, yeah. I was excited. I forget who I was with. I wish I could remember. So they took me back to Howard's
studio. I've never seen it.
Studio. You've never seen it?
Oh, I have. It's so embarrassing, though. E-Rock had a friend up. This was years. This is like when we first got to Sirius. E-Rock had a friend up from like Z100 or something, and he had organized a tour of Howard's thing. But I didn't know he had like organized a whole tour. And he just grabs me right before. He goes, hey, Sam, you want to go see Howard's studio? And I was like, yeah, I guess. And he's like, okay, come here. And like without me realizing it, I jumped on the back of this guy's tour of the Howard thing. And like, there's a guy giving a tour of the studio who I work with every day who obviously knows that I'm not, like, a fan who came up and, like, works for Z100. No. He's like, what the fuck are you doing here?
Yeah.
And I was like,
ugh. Were you embarrassed?
Yeah, I was like, E-Rock, why would you lead me here? This is so sick. And E-Rock was like, 'cause I thought it'd be cool to see the studio.
I would only want to see it if I was being shown it. But, like, if Howard and Robin knew I was seeing it,
yeah,
they would feel, I don't want to sneak in there and peek at someone else's fucking studio. It's creepy.
I mean, it's an amazing studio.
Yeah, I'm sure it's great.
I did the, I don't know.
They're paying him $1 million a year, though. I mean, it's, you know, it's worth it.
Are they paying?
Person's trying to do the math in his head real quick. $1 million a year? Yeah, that's pretty good.
Hey,
wait.
I'm making as much as Howard? So after taxes, no, but I don't remember what I was doing, but it was might have been like a press tour at SiriusXM, and they're like, hey, do you want to go see Howard's studio? And I was like, oh, of course. I was never like, I grew up in Florida, so Ron Bennington was the only person
right
at SiriusXM that I knew, and then Opie and Anthony, and then I never really like, I didn't have Sirius, I had XM, so I never listened to Howard. And then when he mashed up, I listen to Howard every now and then. So I go in, and they're like, and I see Richard Christie and all the guys over there, and they know me, and they're like, and we're all just bullshitting. And then they go, come on, we'll go in. So we go into the studio, and then whoever was with me was like, hey, do you want me to get a picture of you on the couch, like he's interviewing you? And I was like, no.
That's terrible.
And I was like,
who am I, his aunt?
Yeah. He goes, are you sure? And I go, yeah. I don't ever want to sit on that couch unless I'm being interviewed.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Exactly. That's something somebody's aunt does. Go ahead, Nana. Sit over there. I'll pretend you're on the radio.
Yeah. And I was like, can I get in his chair? And they were like, no. I was like, well, that's the only picture I want is me behind his chair.
I really want Jim to get booked on the show, on Howard's show.
Do you think that would happen?
No, I would do it, but I don't see it. No, because I think the times I've met him, he's been very cool. Like, I think he likes me, but it's...
Have you met him?
Yeah, in the hallway we've talked, and I met him at the Apollo, and he... I introduced myself to him. He was walking by one day. I was like, hey, I'm Jim Norton. And he goes, oh, I know who you are. And we chatted. He's like, yeah, you're funny. He was very nice. And he said, Beth said you were really nice to her, his wife. He said, I appreciate that. He was, you know, because I had never shit on her or been nasty to her on the air or anything. And she had me on her show years ago when she did it with Steve Sciarippa. So.
On FX.
Whatever, I don't remember the channel.
It was like they'd pretend to play poker and they'd intro movies or something.
I think so.
Yeah,
she
I did
was
that.
Really sweet.
She was very sweet. I did that show too, and she was super nice.
And we took a picture together, and she goes, no mustaches on it. Like, she was being really nice, but she was going, please don't. Like, and I was like, no, I'm not.
What do you mean, no mustaches?
Like, she
on
meant,
it?
Like, don't, like, tweet it out and do anything bad to it, but she was trying to say it nicely. Like, she was asking me, because she knows the ONA fans can be kind of crazy.
Oh,
I was like, no,
I'm
not.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But she was really sweet. And so, yeah, I don't think he would have me on just because I've been lined up with people. Like, him and Opie and Anthony didn't get along. Him and Leno didn't get along. And I'm associated with those people.
Yeah.
And plus, he may not think I'm a big enough comic to be on the show. But so I don't see it happening.
Yeah. I mean,
why
I don't
would
know.
You like to see me get booked on it?
I think
I'm not
going to
get booked on
an interview.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you can go in too?
Yeah, I would go in the fucking dressing room and be like, yeah, I'll just wait here in the dressing room. I just want to see how it works. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, as somebody who spent so long behind the scenes at a show, like, I want to see what his infrastructure is like.
Really?
That would interest me to know.
I'm amazed at the preparation for the interviews. You know, they do good preparation, his people. They're very good. And I'm sure he prepares.
He does a lot of the work.
No, but I'm saying that the whole... It's very well organized the way they do the behind-the-scenes stuff, and it's just well put together.
His interviews, and I was saying this to Ellis this morning, his interviews are, like, he makes people I don't want to hear sound really fucking interesting.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not anti-Gwen Stefani at all. I don't know anything about Gwen Stefani.
But
don't want to listen to her talk about herself or her life at all. Man, but she's on there, and all of a sudden I'm fucking riveted going, God damn it, man, I should download some Gwen Stefani.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have done the show. I'm not saying that I would never do the show. I would love to do the show, but I'm the wrong personality to do that show. I got a pre-interview one time. Like, they wanted me to do the show, and they called for a pre-interview. And in the pre-interview, I told every secret I'd try to keep away from radio. I was like, I totally talk about this. If you want to talk about the Tracy Morgan story, I'll talk about that. If you want to talk about Jay Moore, I'll talk about that. I was like, all this shit that I try to stay away from. And I was like, I'll tell it all.
Pure desperation.
It was like, I literally would, because like, there's just a little bit of silence. The guy was like, okay, well, we'd like to have you on, but like, what avenues do you think Howard would be interested in? And I was like, well... And I told him, like, when I was 22, I got involved with the Russian Mafia and Robert Train, and then I fought a bear, and I was tame lions, and I've jumped out of airplanes with Rachel Ray, and this and that, and then he just didn't respond, and I was like, oh, this is a no, and then I was like, I'll totally tell this, like, and...
But in actuality, he's just typing.
He's just typing.
Had you called them, or did they call you?
They called me. You know Meredith from Philly?
Yes.
Meredith Trotter, I want to say
Meredith
Trotter.
Meredith Trotter and Helium. Yeah, I saw her this week.
She called me, said, I got a line on, they want you on Stern, and I was like, really? And they were like, yeah, it was right when podcasting took off. And it was like, do you ever Google Trends yourself?
No.
Oh, me either then. I Google Trends myself. It's probably like what my biggest spike is right when podcasting took off, and I told all these crazy stories, and I had a documentary coming out about me, and my book was coming out, and Meredith just hit me up and was like, hey, they're interested. They're going to do a pre-interview. And we did a pre-interview, and then...
It
went away. I guess I sounded too desperate. I don't know.
What'd they say?
They never called me back. But that's, you know, I'm not good at that kind of interview. Like, right. I like fucking around. You know, I like fucking around doing radio. I like doing radio. I don't know if I like being interviewed per se.
Yeah.
Like, about me. Because I did the Unmasked, and I went, told way too many that I cared not to tell.
You did?
Oh, at one point, I could see Ron being like, hey, why don't you... Have some fucking pride.
That was so funny. I mean, just now sitting here, you were like, you know what? Brother Weez and I don't get along. Let's just leave it at that. And Jim was like, well, why not? And you're like, well, since you asked.
I have no fucking edit button. No.
That's great, though. That's why you're a good comic. That's part of it. You're not holding back. You're not fake. It's good.
I cannot hold back. I don't like fakeness. One of my things that I connected with, one of the things I loved, I still love about you is your sheer brutal honesty about everything. But you had that when you were on stage when you were younger. And so did, like, everyone had this brutal honesty about, like, this is who I am. These are all my dirty parts. These are where the scabs are. And I think I love that. And I do this thing now. I do this. Ralphie was like, oh, it has to be a bit. Where sometimes if I'm fucking around, I'll just tell a secret about something that I've never told anyone on stage. And I go, secret time. And I'll just tell a secret. And then I end up telling fucking people horror, like, about the time I got the clap. And and everyone's just like, it's just like the time I thought I got genital warts and soaked my dick and balls in a bowl of vinegar and watched Quantum Leap. Like, but I love that about comedy, because I go, the one thing I feel like it does is it makes people that have problems feel like, hey, that guy's got the same, like, you know what I mean?
Sure. Like, sometimes people say to me, are you ready to get married? You know what I'll say? I'll take a dramatic pause and I'll say, I'm married to the lady comedy.
Ugh. That's terrible. That's so bad.
At least I think it wasn't some punchline. The Johnny Carson voice.
Oh.
Yeah. I listened to you guys this morning.
Did you hear him do the Johnny Carson LA?
On the 405.
I think that's from Punchline, actually.
I think that's from Punchline.
No, there's some guy said the lady comedy. I don't know why I'm from.
He was doing it all last night. Like, we were walking by. He's like, you know, it's just another Tuesday night.
No, but I said it much funnier. I said, look at this. A bunch of people in costumes running around half naked. It's just another Monday night in LA.
It's a fucking hit. Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's a bad Johnny Carson.
It's not Johnny Carson.
It's not. Yes, it is.
No, it isn't. Johnny Carson was much different.
Then we had Kerry Keegan in, and I was like trying to lead him into that impression. He just stopped doing it.
Yeah. I couldn't.
Like a piece of shit.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what this fool is talking about. My God, your breasts are nice.
Yeah.
Who's Kerry Keegan?
She's a large-breasted television host.
Yeah, she's very sweet.
She's got a book coming out. She's going to be on Celebrity Apprentice this year.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
With Arnold?
Yeah.
Hey, I saw
men and women with falsies. Just another day in church here in L.A.
And then he got like on the 405. Here in L.A. Like, yeah, we know where you are, dude.
It's the way to do it.
No, it's not the way to do it.
Wait, what? That's my favorite part about the two of you, is not the character, not you laughing, is that you trying to lead him into him, and he just has no clue. He goes, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, right, Chippa?
No. Okay, it's always a disappointment.
Then, forget it.
Like, a year into comedy, I'm at the Cellar. Geraldo's at the bar. And I'm trying to talk to Geraldo and he's drunk. And Jim is standing right to the side of me. And I can't get the bartender's attention. And I tried to say to Geraldo, what's his name? And Geraldo was not replying to me. And I looked over to Jim. I go, Jim, what's his name? And he goes, oh, it's Steve. And I went, okay, Steve. Steve. And I knew the guy. I'd been drinking at that bar for a while. Steve. Steve. And the guy just turned around and goes, it's Jim. And I went,
so
and
satisfying.
And Jim has just turned around.
Like, do you understand, like, when you go out to eat with Jim, like, I've just already established that if I have to get up to use the bathroom and I don't know where it is and I know Jim knows where it is, I'm better off just wandering around the restaurant because I'm going to be given the wrong directions.
Yeah, yeah. You never give your friend. Anyone that's got skinny legs and hips like Sam, you never give the right directions to. Like, it's always fun to watch your friends lost.
He was on the plane, like, yesterday just drifting in and out of character the entire six-hour flight. And, like, you never know. Like, the we were sitting in JetBlue, and the lady comes and she gives you, like, a box of lotions or whatever.
In mint.
And she gives you a box of lotions. And, like, he passed gas again. You never know if Jim is just going to be like, oh, thank you, and kind of brush it off. Or if it's going to be this big thing that you're just like, oh. And so, like, she gives me a little box of lotions. And I go,
wait, tell him what I said.
I'm about to. And he goes, and I go, oh, thank you. And Jim is sitting there, not even in character, by the way, with his stupid JetBlue blanket on up to his midriff, covering his legs. He's got his blindfold on his forehead. So he just, and nobody else is using the blanket or anything. But he's not doing a bit. That's just how he travels.
Yeah.
And she goes, like, here you go. And Chip just looks at her and goes, how much?
Yeah. How much is that?
She goes, what? Well, excuse me? And he goes, how much is it? She goes, it's complimentary. Oh.
Just, it really is fun just to make you.
Like on the car ride, like it's so. This is how it's a, you know, it's a mental illness, and Jim isn't really in control. He's not in full control of it.
Yeah,
because he's not. It's not like he's in a mood where he's like, "Oh, I'm feeling goofy. I'm going to be Chip." Like he was going back and forth. We were in the car, and you know they closed. What was it? They closed Santa Monica Boulevard.
Yeah, they closed. Oh, God. You know, it was police all around, and. You know, traffic, bumper to bumper, just a typical weekday here in L.A.
It's not even a joke. But we're in a car driving us from the airport, and, like, Jim is getting frustrated with the guy because they cut off the thing, and so it's taking way longer.
The guy was
like,
not doing a good job.
The guy didn't know where he was going.
No, he was lost.
But Jim kept going, like, oh, we should have made that turn, we should have made that turn, and being, like, you know, kind of annoyed. And then if a car cut us off, like that. He'd go from annoyed to going, damn!
Yeah, just into Chip immediately.
Chip reacting to stuff. And I'm like, you were annoyed a minute ago. How could you just shift?
One is happy, one is upset. Yeah, it's kind of, it really is. I need a relationship.
You think that's what it is?
When was your last relationship?
2011.
How many comics have you dated?
One.
That's it?
One.
Just her?
Just one. That was it.
Really?
Yeah, we broke up 2006 or 7, or it might have been the beginning of 08. We did like a year and a half. And it's just, I have so many female comic friends that I like that my friends.
Kelsey Cook is one of them.
Kelsey's a very good
Kelsey
friend of
mine. Kelsey is supposed to, I was going to do the makeup show with her, but I'm never home long enough.
It's fun. She's funny too. She just wants some roast battle thing. Like Kelsey is a funny
like Kelsey.
Act. And. But I like my relationships with female comics. They're all friendships because it's the one time I feel truly healthy around women is female comics because I really love them for the right reasons. Like, I mean, you know, some of them are really hot, but I really enjoy their humor and their personalities and I don't have all, you know what I mean? It's nice. Yeah. It's not that I don't like other girls like that, but I know when I'm on the road with a female comic, like who was my friend and my opener, if she's going to come in and we're going to watch the comeback at 1 a.m. in my hotel room, I'm literally going to say goodnight at the end of it and not try to fuck her, and she's not there for any weird reasons.
I can never do that.
It feels normal and healthy.
No, if I worked with – if I started taking a girl on the road with me, I'd probably develop a crush on her at some point.
Really?
Yeah.
But would you have to act on it, or could you just live in the crush?
No.
You'd
act on
it.
That's the name of my new book, Live in the Crush.
That's so – Live in the Crush.
Live in the Crush. I'm spelling it with a K.
Ooh.
Oh, so cool and edgy.
Yeah, it's like, you know what I mean? I wanted to go back to like the early 80s days of hip hop.
Crush groove.
Yeah.
Jess is so like nice. Like my wife's like just her default is niceness, which I don't understand at all. She just automatically assumes the best in everybody. And
obviously.
Like whenever we bring up Jim though, she goes like, even if it's somebody else, like my dad's like, you know, oh, and how's Jim doing? I'm like, oh, it's really good. We're doing a show together. And Jess goes, you know, he's good, but he really needs a relationship. He just wants a relationship right now. And I'm like, Jess, what are you talking about?
She's probably right, though. Jess knows. Well, how about Jess steps up to the plate and mentions me to a friend?
I told her not to.
Why?
Jess, because you're not a healthy boyfriend.
I am a healthy boyfriend.
Oh, Jess, my God. Jim would be the best parallel dating. Like, if my wife had a best friend and they introduced each other, and then after the breakup you get all the gossip.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be amazing. That would be like finding Capone's faults and there's being something in it.
Yeah. Because you know, like all the public stuff about Jim is scratching the surface.
Oh,
he's
the
like,
surface.
Jim's like, you know, I don't have, you know, I'm honest about everything. So I'm like, no, you're not. You're scratching the surface.
No, I admit there's things I don't say, though. I admit there's things I don't say, sure.
Yeah.
But I'm honest about who I am. Like, I'm not some fake pretending. Of course, there's details I don't give out. But there's nothing, most things I don't say are to protect people I've dated. Like to protect their anonymity or their privacy. There's very little I've shielded myself from. There's some, sure.
Yeah.
But nothing that would ruin me.
I would love that. Yeah, that's actually such a great point.
Nah, there's nothing.
Look at all that post-relationship gossip.
You know why it's
shocking? Even if you just got tips on how he fought, like the things he would say when they fought, I'd be so interested in all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. Anthony Weiner, Elliot Spitzer were such shocked because they paint themselves one way.
Right.
I don't paint myself one way.
No.
I'm already 70 yards in.
Yeah.
So when I hit the end zone, you're not shocked. Like with those guys, we're at the fucking 1-yard line. You're like, oh my God, I can't believe that's who you were. But me, you're like, hey, you didn't tell us that and that, but we kind of knew who you were anyway. But there's nothing monstrous in it. There's nothing in it that I think would cause people to dislike me who already like me. There's nothing in it that would cause me to go to jail. There's nothing in it. That, you know what I mean? Like, I'm very grateful for the fact that as much as it's gone, how it's gone, there's nothing I'm terrified of having uncovered. Nothing.
Yeah, there's nothing. I mean, there's, I think there's probably tons of videos of me saying horribly sexist, homophobic, subtly racist things in college. You know, when you're young and you're just exploring personalities and you're trying to be tough. That's the only thing that I think I'd ever be guilty of. But mostly I don't cheat on my wife. I there's got to be, I'm sure there's strip club videos of me that could go viral where they'd be like, ooh.
But even so, it's like, would anybody really be surprised? It's like you've kind of made your reputation on being a fun guy to party with. Not you.
I came out of a strip club. There's a strip club in Cleveland at the Improv. You ever do the Cleveland Improv?
I have not.
There's a strip club there that is like, at one point I was like, I think this is where you could consider this cheating on your wife. Like, this is totally like, and I was like, I had to stop her, be like, hey, you know, I appreciate your intention, but I'm married. She's like, it's just a strip club. And I was like, nah, what you're doing, where I think you're going is the angle where it you get in trouble.
Yeah, you're leaving a slug trail on my face. You're leaving a racing stripe from my forehead to my belt.
And so I walked out of the strip club, and as soon as I got out of the strip club, these ladies went, oh, my God. Oh, my God, it's Bert the Conqueror. Oh, my God. And they're like, my kid loves your show. And I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
I did the same. It happened in two strip clubs, that one and one with Brett Ernst in West Palm. We went in and the strippers recognized me. And they all came off stage, put on their street clothes, and went outside to take pictures with me. And I just was like, nah, I don't want my kids ever seeing me at strip clubs. That's where I come from, is I don't want my kids seeing certain stuff. But yeah, I don't think I have too much of a... I know there's going to be footage. If someone can get footage of the WikiLeaks of my camera, of me jacking off, if...
Right, you were saying that, I think, last time that you were... listening, I think you were talking about the Patrice Memorial show.
Oh, yeah.
When you were listening to that on the computer, but watching porn on mute and jerking off, and so the
all you'd see
the WikiLeaks tape of you is just you jerking off to Patrice being dead.
But like, I've never put a Band-Aid over that. Like a covered it. I've still never. Covered
I always it. Intend to do that too.
And I must have. What? How many days wrong? I jerk off every single day on the road.
Right.
And so there's just sometimes twice a day.
Yeah, I always mean to do that, and I never do. They show Mark Zuckerberg does it. And he does it over the mic, too.
What?
Puts really? A little piece of black tape over the webcam and the mic.
Holy
does
shit.
Does he when?
All the time. Like, there was just a photo of Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook, and he's just, like, posing for the camera, and you could see his laptop, and there's a black tape over the camera and a black tape across the mic on the side.
Wait, does he do that when it's on, when it's not, when it's turned off?
No, just, yeah, always. He just leaves it that way. A lot of people, especially people who know about tech, just leave... a strip of tape over their webcam always.
Well, there's not much people can see. It's just me jerking off. Whoever wants to watch that, God bless.
Well, yeah, that might fuck with my career because I'm sitting crisscross applesauce and it's just my gut and I have
sitting. Oh,
people would be surprised to see you looking unpleasant naked. What are you talking about?
It is weird that you said Indian style and jerk off.
Crisscross applesauce.
Crisscross applesauce.
You said crisscross and jerk off?
Yeah.
What a creep.
That's weird.
And I put a towel over my leg, like over my legs, like a loincloth.
That's your, your ritual?
As ritual.
Yes, I was talking to someone the other day. Oh, please. I wish I could remember who this is. And they were saying that what they do is they jack off and then catch it fucking Dave Smith.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was saying he jacks off and he catches it. Like, he shoots it and catches it. And I was like, oh, when I have an orgasm, I need my body to be completely in zen mode. Like, I can't have, like, I can't be trying to catch something.
Right, right. You're relaxed. Oh.
Although that would be a good orgasm is as you went to masturbate, someone tossed you a football as you came. And you're like, ugh. So what else is planned for the week? I'll let you guys. We've done an hour and a half.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that went by pretty quick.
Yeah, we got tonight I have dinner with my manager and one of my exes who's my friend. We'll have some dinner and
Talk deals.
Yeah, talk deals, talk business.
Talk turkey.
And I'll feel, I'm going to go to the gym as soon as we get back. I'm going to shit and go to the gym.
The gut looks actually bigger than it was this morning.
It couldn't.
What's on the list for you? What do you want to do? What's in your...
Shooting a special in December.
What's the name of it? Do you know the name yet?
Mouthful of Shame, probably.
Yeah.
Hopefully be out in March, February. And leading up to that, I'm actually going to take a little bit of time to just do new stuff. The beginning of my act now is so much different than it was at the start of the tour. Probably 20 minutes is different, 25 minutes is different than it was when I started. And I love that it's different than when I started, because now I don't feel like I'm doing the same material for 2 years.
Yeah.
Like, there's certain things that have been
in
there.
It takes 2 years for you to do a special?
No, I was ready in a year. Yeah. It's better now than it was. It's better. And it feels right. I finally got the opening few lines.
Yeah.
One night by accident. I was like, ah, finally. Yeah. That's why you keep doing it. Because it was fucking not opening strong. And now I really feel good about the opening.
That's great.
So, yeah, that's all. I want to do that. I want my show with Sam. I'm enjoying a lot. I never want to go out and do press with other people. It's always me doing it by myself. But with Sam, I was like, let's go do stuff. I'm happy to be doing it with him. So I think that we'll have a fun time doing the other podcast. It's like, and I'm not being Pete positive, but I'm really fucking having fun.
Are you guys going to, do you think you guys would do live shows together?
Yeah, we would.
Want to. Sure. We were already talking about that.
Really?
Yeah, we really want
merchandise?
To.
Merchandise? Are we talking merchandise?
We do what? Some merch.
On Chatterbait. Nah, merchandise I don't care about. I mean, who the fuck? If there was something funny and they wanted to put it out, and we could make that, sure. But I don't give a fuck about that.
Yeah, we want to do live shows. I had Jim at, because I did a few live shows when I was doing the night show. And I had Jim at the Sam-iversary show. Ugh. It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Except for the name.
Sam-iversary?
Yeah, it's the first anniversary of Sam Roberts show.
Oh,
what else are you going to call it?
That's, yeah. I get it. I thought it was for sandwiches.
No, it's Sam
I'm gonna piss my pants.
All right, let's wrap this up.
When is this airing?
Tonight.
I will be on Friday at the Melrose Improv, the 4th.
Okay.
My only set in LA, and then I got a bunch of other stuff coming up, Fort Lauderdale, and a whole bunch of other shit. So check me out and whatever.
Are you going to be running the hour you're doing in December?
Oh yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Nice. So if you guys want to see Jim's hour, head out to the Melrose Improv Friday night. I will be in, I'm throwing my surprise birthday party on the 3rd, 4th, 5th in Dayton. And then I'll be in the 6th. I'm in New York the 6th and the 7th. Are you guys back in the city?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll see you. I'll be swinging by XM, I'm sure.
Swing by.
You know, I'm a heavy heater.
Yeah.
Hitter.
Heavy heater?
Fucking, never mind.
Heavy header.
No, I'm doing a satellite tour out of New York, so I might be there doing it. And then your show airs 10 o'clock?
8 to 11 a.m.
8 to 11.
Monday
Eastern.
Through Friday.
Eastern.
Yeah.
Big so Apple out, time.
Out here 6 a.m.
5.
To 5 a.m.
5 to 8.
5 a.m. to 8 a.m.
Are you sure?
You're terrible at math, bro. Yeah,
quite positive.
All right. I appreciate you guys doing this. Enjoy the rest of L.A. Any imparting words about L.A.?
Imparting? You mean...
Any more...
About L.A.?
And L.A.
He's trying to set you up. He doesn't know how to do it.
No, I did notice, though. I saw crazy floats and people screaming in the street.
Yeah, well, wasn't it Halloween?
Yeah. It was.
Cool.
Thank you guys for doing
this. Thank you, buddy.
Love you guys. This episode was brought to you by The Machine.